in the world was this guy? And why in the world does it matter? Well, that's exactly what I want to cover in this video. In the meantime, I'd just like to say, Catholics, please stop. And Protestants, watch this video before you engage the Apostolic Fathers, because you've probably seen claims like this before.
Many Protestant scholars and apologists bite the bullet on this one. They admit sola fide was fairly or even entirely unknown in the early church.
This issue actually shook me a little while back as a Protestant, as an evangelical Christian, as a believer, and also a lover of Reformed theology.
Yeah.
Beliefs that I find wholly scriptural. That's holy with a W in front. This is precisely why I'm responding thoughtfully to the Catholic and Orthodox claim that Protestant doctrines do not exist in the earliest writings outside of the New Testament. And if this is a topic you're interested in, there's good news, because this is part of a larger series in which I'll look at justification by faith, Reformed theology, the 5 points of Calvinism, and relevant Catholic Orthodox doctrines. So this video specifically is preparing the way for that discussion with a thoughtful yet brief introduction to the Apostolic Fathers. All right, so why is this important? Well, engaging the Apostolic Fathers and aligning yourself with them, at least in part, is essential for modern Christians, because the Fathers are the earliest Christians outside of the New Testament, and they give us incredible insight into how we should understand the Bible itself, especially when it comes to interpreting the beliefs of the apostles. Have you ever wondered why, for example, different branches of Christianity use the same Bible as a proof text for their beliefs? This is because we all have different interpretations. Yes, I understand that there is only one truth at the end of the day, and that sometimes some truth in differing views, but my point is that interpretation can be difficult, and it explains seemingly contradictory views on the same passage of Scripture. Look, if you've never dealt with this, then you've probably never actually studied the Bible. Long story short, this interpretation issue gets especially complicated when we realize the biggest three branches, being Orthodox, Protestant, Catholic, all use the apostles' words, Peter, Paul, etc., to prove their very different doctrinal views on something important like justification, for example. This is where the Apostolic Fathers come in, because when we disagree on what the apostles meant by their words, it might be helpful to read what the people who knew them said about that verse. Yes, we actually have some of their writings, which is a tremendous blessing when you think about it. So who are the Apostolic Fathers, those who met the apostles? If you're interested in getting to know them, I recommend this little green version compiled by Michael W. Holmes with historical introductions and commentary. It also contains the original Greek texts on the left pages for comparing. And here's the most important thing: the entirety of second generation Christians who have surviving writings. Crazy, right? Let me introduce them to you. Meet Clement of Rome, pastor of the Roman Church in the first century and possibly mentioned in Paul's letter to the Philippians. Yes, right there. Polycarp of Smyrna. Yes, that's the Smyrna mentioned in Revelation, and some believe Polycarp was the angel mentioned there, though I take an early date for it, and that's impossible. Nonetheless, he was a disciple of the Apostle John. Pretty cool, huh? Ignatius of Antioch, the bishop, that's like the head pastor of the churches, plural, of Antioch. Yeah, it had a large Christian demographic that sent out Paul and Barnabas on their first missionary journey. Ignatius was the most prominent Christian leader of that city in the second generation of Christians, who was also discipled by the Apostle John. And then there's Papias of Hierapolis. Like Polycarp and Ignatius, Lucius. Papias was also a disciple of John, so I guess John was a pretty big deal. According to church historian Eusebius, he wrote 5 books, of which only a few fragments and quotes remain, but he's still worth mentioning because even though opinions of him were a mixed bag, he represents one of only a handful of second-generation Christians for whom we have surviving writings. After these, there are a few writings we usually attribute to that generation without as much certainty of who wrote them, though they are still highly regarded as authoritative. And they are the Epistle of Barnabas. No one signed this letter, but it was attributed to the Apostle Paul's companion, Barnabas, as early as the 2nd century, which would certainly be interesting. Either way, it's a very early Christian writing. The Didache, which means the teaching specifically of the apostles. At points, it directly shares teachings and wording with the Epistle of Barnabas. So either the same person wrote both or one borrowed from the other. The Didache offers incredible insights into the practices of the early church. It may even be the earliest Christian writing outside of the New Testament. Hey, it's possible, and includes instructions on baptism, vehemently prohibits abortion, and commands believers to abstain from things like hallucinogenic drugs. Sorry, Joe Rogan. There's also an anonymous letter to Diognetus. Though anonymous, this letter claims to have been written by someone who was, quote, a disciple of apostles, plural. Interesting to think of who this could have been. The original manuscript was discovered with other writings by Justin Martyr, a third-generation Christian. But the bottom line is we're just not sure. And finally, the Shepherd of Hermas, a very early Christian writing that some believed should be included in the canon of Scripture. Some made the case that Hermas was the man mentioned in Romans 16 by Paul, but again, we're not sure. Yes, there's several considered fathers, but I chose to focus on these because they are the first generation after the apostles and claim to have known them personally. So you have to admit there is a little bit of weight to what we find here. By the way, do you see why this is so cool yet? We have writings from the people who knew apostles and were, like them, savagely martyred for their faith. I mean, we should probably take a look at those. Seriously. Bottom line is, these people are incredibly important for church history, and we can't ignore them. On a personal note, I had the best time getting to know these guys from their writings. One of my favorite quotes comes from Ignatius, who said this before being consumed by wild animals for Roman entertainment. Allow me to become food for the wild beasts, through whose means it will be granted me to reach God. I am the wheat of God, and am ground by the teeth of the wild beasts, that I may be found the pure bread of Christ. I mean, savage, right? It would be interesting to see what difference Christians could make today if they would take this same mentality to their ministries. The mentality of people like Polycarp, who said this before being burned alive and then stabbed to death. Yes, in that specific order. 86 years I have served him, and he never did me any wrong, said Polycarp. How can I blaspheme my king who saved me? You threaten with the fire that burns for a short time and is soon quenched. You don't know about the fire of the coming judgment and eternal punishment that awaits the wicked. But why are you waiting? Come, do what you will. Cold-blooded. Well, there you go, friends. I'm trying to keep these videos short and punchy. Hopefully this one was packed full of good content and a good survey of the Apostolic Fathers. If you did like it, please share it with a friend. There's more to come. Until next time, it was great to gospel with you.